Hi and welcome to Different Leaf, a show for new and experienced cannabis consumers. I'm Britt Smith. This episode, in honor of Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, we're learning about the role of ganja in communities that hail from South Asia, also known as the Desi community. From Bangladesh to India to Sri Lanka, the ganja plant has been incorporated into South Asian religious ceremonies and health practices for centuries. In fact, cannabis itself is thought to have originated in that region of the world between the mountains of Nepal and Afghanistan. You may have heard of the Sanskrit word kush, used in modern cannabis strain names, or bhang, which is a mixture of ganja buds and leaves that has been added to food and drink for thousands of years in the Indian subcontinent. Given its long and well-established use as a medicine and its major significance in religions like Hinduism and Sikhism, I wanted to know more about how cannabis consumption is received in today's Desi families, how British colonization changed the way weed was treated in South Asia, and what the future looks like for the relationship between the Desi community and the ganja plant. Our guests today are Shivrali Patel and Yogi Maharaj, two of the founders of the Desi Cannabis Collective, the first women-founded nonprofit dedicated to reclaiming, educating, and empowering the South Asian diaspora about cannabis and hemp.
Hi, everyone. My name is Yogi Maharaj, and I'm one of the co-founders at Desi Cannabis Collective.
Hi, everyone. My name is Shivrali Patel, and I'm one of the co-founders at Desi Cannabis Collective.
Very nice to meet both of you. Thank you so much for joining me. So let's start with a bit on your backgrounds. Shivrali, where did you grow up?
Yes, born and raised in U.S., in New Jersey, actually, is where my parents decided to immigrate to from India.
Nice. And Yogi, how about you? Where are you from?
I am from the Bay Area. I was born and raised in Hayward, California, and this is where I've been my whole life.
Nice. I used to live out in the Bay Area, too. I went to school out there.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a little place. I like that area of the world. So both of you were brought up and raised and schooled in the U.S. Tell me a little bit about how your families view the world of cannabis that you've now moved into.
So I can start. Initially, you know, when I told them that I was getting into the, I actually didn't even tell them I was getting into the industry, because in New Jersey, where the state legalized medical cannabis back in 2010 or end of 2010, going into 2011. And I was still in, I think I was graduating undergrad that year. And I remember being excited and telling my parents, like, medical's happening in New Jersey, you know, eventually we're going to get it legal. And they were just like, you know, it's marijuana, number one, and it's a drug. And we don't really know what you're talking about. And so for a couple of years, I had to be really quiet about what it is that I was doing until I decided that, no, this is an industry where I belong and I love this plant. And it's time for them to accept it. Even if they can't be supportive, at least acknowledge that this is what I'm going to do with my life. And so eventually they started realizing how much I cared about the plant, and then seeing for themselves firsthand the medical benefits of the plant is really what created a full turn for them. And now they're so supportive. They try to, you know, my mom's always reading articles about it. My dad loves it now. They don't partake yet, but I hope to get them on that side.
How about you, Yogi? Did you have a similar sort of stigma in your family growing up?
Yes, definitely. I had a similar stigma. I started consuming cannabis at a young age, and my parents were very against it. But as legalization happened in California and I was able to find a career in it, they've become more supportive. I think it was when my grandma had a very serious heart attack and she started consuming cannabis, guided by my older sister, where they started being more supportive of it. My mom uses it more, a little bit more frequently than my father does. She loves consuming CBD products. But there was a huge stigma for many, many, many years. And I think it was when it was like 10 years after I started consuming cannabis, where they finally started accepting that this is what she's going to do. This is like, we were meant for this, just like Shivrali said.
So let's talk a bit about how marijuana is rooted in Asian cultures, because there's been this huge change over the decades, over the centuries, really, of what cannabis is seen as in the world, especially in the Desi community. And for those that don't know, because I had to look this up, what does Desi mean?
Desi means anyone from the South Asian diaspora. So Desi in Hindi means like a land, the motherland. And Desi is people of those land. And before it used to mean those who are from South Asia, who were in South Asia. But as the British took over India, they started exporting us to different places across the world. And those people became known as Desis as well. So it's not just those who are from South Asia, but anyone who has roots to the motherland in South Asia.
And let's talk about British colonization. Obviously, I'm straight from London. So this is a history that I never learned, of course, because why would the British schooling system teach me about all of these atrocities that they had done? But really, the change in what cannabis was to the Indian diaspora has changed because of colonization. Can we talk a little bit about what cannabis marijuana meant to the South Asian diaspora before colonization and then sort of after colonization? What was the original use of cannabis in those parts of the world?
You know, originally cannabis was mentioned in our Ved. So I guess the English pronunciation is Vedas, but it's actually the Ved and the Vedao. And in the Atharved, it's listed as one of the five sacred plants that we use for medicine, for wellness, for spirituality. It's known as Vijaya or Soma in the ancient texts, which go back 4,000 or 5,000, even more years old. So ancient prehistoric usage of this plant has been happening in our motherland. And so for thousands of years, this plant has been used in our country for plant medicine and for spirituality, and even in celebration with certain festivals. So Shivratri, which we just celebrated, or Holi, you know, these festivals are incomplete without the consumption of bhang, which is a byproduct of cannabis flower. And so it's been ingrained in our culture. But unfortunately, when, you know, the British invaded and colonization took place, it really uprooted the entire basis of what this plant has been utilized for. And it went from, you know, plant medicine in pharmacology in India to now it's a restricted form of medicine. And it's only eventually when the British did invade, you know, they said, keep growing the cannabis flower and growing the hemp stalk, and then we're going to export it out to the rest of the world. And so they were indenturing our people back home. And so they were taking advantage for the plant as a commodity now. And after, you know, we won back our independence, it just left the country in shambles. And the last thing that they were going to focus on was the plant, right? They had to rebuild infrastructure. And this wasn't that long ago. 1947 is when we won independence, right? That's not even 100 years later. And so we're coming back to our roots and finally acknowledging and accepting that this is Ayurveda, this is medicine. And that's why at the federal level, cannabis still remains legal for medicinal purposes in limited senses, and it's still state by state, you know, subjugation. But we've come a long way from ancient times.
I couldn't believe when I read that up until like 1985, it was sold in government shops in India. And like when it was made illegal by the British, a lot of it was because they wanted to start importing scotch. They wanted some other way that they could make money. And they also had all these folks who knew so much about agriculture and cannabis and farming that they could ship them off. It's like the entire story of cannabis in India and Pakistan and around that part of the world has just changed course so drastically and kind of horrifically because of all this enslavement hundreds of years ago. And we're still feeling it now. So because it was formally seen as a medicine and some sort of like a remedy, and it was used in religion, and then it was illegalized, I guess that's when sort of the view of cannabis started changing and the stigma started coming in. Yogi, can you talk a little bit about how it is now viewed in Asian households, like in families, as sort of more of a drug?
Yes, cannabis has been systemically criminalized in our community. It was linked to insanity. The British tried to link it to insanity, and we're still living with those effects now. People are very scared. People being our elders are very scared that it is a drug, because for many centuries, our elders were locked up in insane asylums for the use of cannabis. And it's very reflective of what the system is now and today, like, you know, where people are criminalized for cannabis because of whatever reason, because it's a Schedule I drug. And so I think a lot of parents, a lot of elders live with that fear. A lot of people in America who are South Asian are criminalized for cannabis use, as well as in the past. So I feel like there's a long history of trauma, just like in the Black community, there's a long history of trauma where this plant has been utilized to as a weapon against us, against our communities. And so that's exactly what I feel like our elders live in fear of today, is that we will be criminalized, that we will go to jail, that our futures will be ruined, because so many of our futures and so much of our culture was ruined because of the British essentially wanting control of the plant, wanting to make a profit off of it. And we didn't let them. The South Asian community, South Asia, had their own illicit market that was born after the British tried to force us to pay licenses for cultivation, for distribution. And so it's like, it's all a huge cycle. And it's just, there has been no healing. Just like Shirali said, we had our freedom. Our country was left in shambles. And there's a lot of work to be redone. To build something from the ground up again is one thing, but to rebuild an entire system of ideologies and spirituality is a whole other battle.
Folks today are finding that there's many different ways that cannabis plays a part in their lives, and spirituality is obviously a big one for the South Asian communities. How do you think that the use of cannabis has changed through spirituality since we've seen it go from legal to illegal to sort of semi-legal again? How have you witnessed that change with how it's used in religion?
There is a subsect of individuals that have continued to use this plant for spiritual and religious reasons, regardless of what's been happening in the mainstream. And so I'm referring to the Aghoris, or, you know, the Brahmins, or the any rishi or sage, I would say, that has been a devotee to Shiv or Shiva, because Shiv is the god in our culture that's created this plant, right? Or the energy. I wouldn't say god, but Shiva is more of an energy that we all identify as, and we all come from that same source energy. And so I think that those individuals to this day have been consuming this plant. So before prayers, before meditations, before yogic exercises, or just even before breathing, right? They're consuming this plant from a chillum. They're using the hash, the resin, natural-based forms. And so even to when I go back to the motherland, in certain parts, when I go visit the temples, I will see them sitting outside under the banyan tree consuming, right? Because that's how they invoke the gods, and it's still used. Mainstream wise, Yogi knows a lot more, so I'll let her elaborate. But when we have festivals with Holi, for example, that's when the whole nation or anybody that identifies will think it's okay on this specific day to consume because we're celebrating. But my belief is, if it's okay this day, it's okay every day. Because what makes this day any different if we're, especially if we're praising our gods? And so it's within our culture. So I think that there's just this subsect of those who choose to continue using it spiritually and have been for so many years and centuries. And then you have the mainstream individuals where they use it because they think on this specific religious day, we should use it. But I think there's a lot of people on the regular, like Yogi and I, I'm sure, you know, we consume before we pray or before we meditate, because it's just, it's part of our connection to the spiritual realm.
Yeah.
I also feel like cannabis was used like medicinally. If you look at, I think it's the Atharva Veda, but there were about 108 different formulations that contained cannabis that were used for different ailments. There were things that you ingested. There were things that you used in your body. Farmers used to use it. Farmers, my dad said that when he went to visit India, farmers would just rub buds in their hand and scrape off the resin so that they can smoke after a long day because of all the pressure and all the wear that physical labor has on your body. So there are very many spiritual roots that still exist to cannabis, but a lot of it is what Shirali said, like we only consume on certain festivals. And even then, it's very taboo. Like if you try to bring Pong to a temple in America, you know, you're going to get looked at a little funny, because I know I definitely brought it and people looked at me like I was doing something that was so disconnected from our culture. And the truth is that a lot of people just haven't had that experience. You know, South Asians in Jamaica have had a very different connection and experience with cannabis than South Asians in Fiji, where my family is from. So there are some places where it's still revered, and there are some places where it's completely taboo and it's seen as like something very, very destructive.
Wow, that's such an interesting change to see. And it really didn't happen over that many years, you know, as it went from sort of this pinnacle of the spiritual world to being like a taboo thing that you kind of can't even bring into a like a temple in San Francisco. Like, it's changed so much. And I know that there's a lot of generations and a lot of cultures where our elders frown upon drug use in general. And I feel like as we see more legalization and we see more products come out, maybe it starts to ease that stigma a little bit. Folks start to think of it more like alcohol, like you can use it at the end of the day. Do you guys feel like there's that lifting of stigma in your own communities as well?
I think it depends on the work that's being done. And if you're surrounded or exposed to the information and education that's required to pass that learning curve. And so in my immediate household, you know, like Yogi was talking about, it's the medical experiences that the family had to go through. And so seeing my aunt deal with her chemo and how opioids didn't help her, but the plant medicine did. My 92-year-old grandma right now, for the past 3.5, maybe 4 years, she's been on a topical that I give her, just a balm for her sciatic pain, for her arthritis. And every night and morning, she rubs it all over her body. And she tells my dad that this is the only medicine that works for me. And so it's amazing. And she knows, because she's not getting, you know, that physical, like she's not getting the head high, for example, she's getting localized pain relief, right? Which is amazing. And so I tell my dad, you know, for your blood pressure, for example, you might want to try a tincture in the morning. It might help you. You know, I don't believe in the pharmaceutical industry because I've litigated against. I'm all about plant medicine. And so I think that showing our elder community and just our community in general about how beneficial this is compared to the side effects of pills and what they do to your body, because so many people in our community and just the elders in general are on so many different medications, and cannabis, maybe it isn't for everybody, but if it is, it can replace a lot of those pills. And it can be just a healthy alternative. And so I think it just starts with education. And for me, it's been the medical side of the plant that's really helped people around me embrace it and really love it.
How about you, Yogi? What's your experience been?
My experience has been, my family is very religious. And so I tried explaining to them all the medicinal benefits that could come with it, but it wasn't until I really started exploring more of the spiritual and religious roots of the plant that kind of got my family thinking about it, and my grandma using it, of course, but they were still very unsure. And I think that the more education there is on the roots of it, the more that the stigma is being changed. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for our family, it was really the spiritual roots of it, because for them, they're deeply like ingrained in this pharmaceutical industry. They believe that this, like coming from a country where there was no running water, where there's no, you know, where you could die from an infection from a cut, you know, they truly believe in that the pharmaceutical industry is here to help them. And so really like talking to them about how it's connected to Shiva and how it's celebrated in India for Holi and what Bhang is and how it was, how it's like it's thousands of years old. It's related to like one of our stories, one of our ancient stories, which is the Samudra Manthan. And that's like the churning of the cosmic ocean. And it's a story, it's one of the founding stories of how cannabis came to be in our, you know, in our culture. It was literally a gift from Shiva to us, to our continent.
For health, medicine, wellness?
Yeah, for health, for medicine, for wellness. Some stories say that the god of Ayurveda came out with a vessel that contained the elixir of immortality, which is what Soam is, what Shirali was talking about. And this Soam splashed in 4 different places in the world, and that is how we got cannabis. So that's one of the stories.
That's quite beautiful. That reminds me, the other day I was high as a kite and I was reading, I was reading something about religion, and it suddenly dawned on me that like the tree of knowledge in the Bible, that's got to be cannabis, right? Like that's got to be weed.
Yeah.
There's got to be so many references. There's so many references to it. And I think that if I'm not a religious person, I would count myself as spiritual. But I think that if you read certain texts in certain ways, you can really see that cannabis has dated back as a root kind of plant that humans rely on across so many different texts. I think it's fascinating. And like you were saying, it's like in different parts of the world as well. Like it's become part of spirituality for people across this globe in different ways, which is kind of a nice, beautiful way to bond together.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what was important in South Asia too, was it wasn't just for the Hindus. You know, there were people of all different religions from all different walks of life who were coming together to celebrate with this plant.
Yeah. I think it's a beautiful way to move forward as well, connecting to that spirituality. Again, a lot of folks, especially during and after the pandemic, found meditation to be very useful. I smoke before every single meditation. That's every morning and every night for me. I make sure I do at least 15 minutes. I have a little app on my phone that sort of talks me through it, but just that peace that I get from taking the big, deep breath from my bong and exhaling and just like letting the day go. There's something really peaceful about just being with yourself, being with your breath, and having that cannabis sort of enhance the feeling of your body during the whole experience. I love it. So what is it that you wanted the Desi Cannabis Collective to do for the world? I guess, why did you want to start this nonprofit?
It was to unite everybody, right? It was to bring us together and to have a commonality, because I'm here in New Jersey, Yogi's in California, our other co-founder, Rachna Patel, she's in Texas. We're all three independent South Asian women who love the plant. And we've all, you know, on our separate platforms, we've been talking about it. And, you know, I found Yogi, I think on Instagram maybe, or LinkedIn, and Dr. Rachna, and I remember just sending it out an email and saying, hey, like, I'd love to learn more about you. And then us three connected, and I was like, listen, I have this idea to start, you know, a nonprofit. And I had a name for it, which a guy stole from me.
Oh, no.
Which is why the more reason to do this all women-led and women-founded organization. Mm-hmm. But I think we formed it in June. And by September, we got our 501c3 letter. So we're officially a recognized nonprofit. And our goal is to re-educate, reclaim, and just restore this plant as to, you know, for where it belongs. It belongs on a pedestal for all of us, I think. And the goal is to bring other like-minded people, just not only in America, but all over the world, who want to come to a safe space. You know, we have a feature that Yogi's been working on, which is coming out, not like coming out the closet, but for Desis especially, you know, coming out to our parents, for example, and to the community. It's a big deal because we've lived in the shadows and with the stigma for so long, especially as women who are going to say now, you know, or who smoke cannabis, right? It's like a no-no. And so I think that we just wanted to put ourselves out there and say, listen, we're shameless in our use. This is who we are professionally and personally. And we want to create this collective for everybody to be a part of. And the goal is moving forward to build out our membership and to create, you know, events. And eventually the concept ultimately is to create a safe space. I'll let Yogi add on that.
We want to create a temple where we are able to consume cannabis and really connect to the roots of our culture. So a lot of that has to do with when we go to the temple, a lot of things are segregated. A lot of things are taboo. We mostly learn about just what the books say versus actually putting those lessons to practice. So we want to create a space where we can practice yoga under the influence of cannabis, where we can have celebrations for Holi and for Shivratri, where people can come and enjoy the plant the way that it was meant to be enjoyed, to have gardens where we are growing fruits and vegetables amongst our cannabis so that it heals the community. You know, there are places in India called ashrams, and ashrams provide housing, they provide food, they provide a place for those who have nowhere to go, like to live. And so that's what we really want to create with the Desi Cannabis Collective, is to have temples around the globe where people can come and find shelter, find food, find healing that goes beyond just going in, getting your food and being discharged, or just with a temple where you go in, you say your prayer and you just leave. You know, prayer is a ritual. It's something that is like a part of our everyday experiences. And so being able to do those things with cannabis is like the goal for our temple.
That sounds so beautiful. I can't wait to visit one of those. I have plans in my life to go out to Denver where they have a cannabis church, which I think is, you know, one of the first of like what I hope will be a long range of religious institutions that start to incorporate cannabis into their practice, or at least allow people the option to add it to their practice, to their prayers. I know that there was, along with colonization, a lot of ridding of religion from a lot of the world. And it's just, I think cannabis is another way for a lot of us to reclaim that, to reconnect with those roots, and to learn about our history. So I want to thank you both so much for shining a light on what that means for your community and for educating us on a bit of the history of hemp and ganja in the South Asian diaspora. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
A huge thanks to our guests, Yogi and Shivrali of the Desi Cannabis Collective. You can find them on Instagram at Desi Cannabis Collective, where you can learn more about the history of ganja and the South Asian community. Next week, we'll hear from Bradford Beckerman of Hennepin's Hemp, a company that is powered by adults with disabilities.
I wound up meeting this farming family that I got the dog from. They're old school cannabis people too. So they're heirloom strains and all this kind of stuff. And they had a proprietary cultivar, which is the 0.3 or less THC, just like the Charlotte's Web kind of story, but in a different form, meaning in this case, I'm like the Charlotte kind of person, but I already had, my epilepsy hadn't seized really since 05 from marijuana.
Follow us on social media at @differentleaf or at @different_leaf. And I'm on social media at @BritTheBritish. Different Leaf the magazine is now on the shelves at more than 1,500 newsstands across the US and Canada. Go to differentleaf.com to buy any of the issues or to find the nearest dispensary or bookstore near you that sells Different Leaf the magazine. That's differentleaf.com.